3, 2, 1.
It's a very interesting picture of a young Donald Trump. That is Donald Trump right in the front there, leading his fellow students from the New York Military Academy down Fifth Avenue. This is October of 1963. One day, Donald Trump would have his own tower on Fifth Avenue, Trump Tower, of course, from which he would launch his successful presidential campaign. Yeah, Donald Trump wore a uniform. He wasn't in the military, but he wore the uniform of the New York Military Academy. That's located in upstate New York, not terribly far from West Point. And he did, by all accounts, very well there. He was the honor cadet, as I understand it. And you see in these photos, he is front and center in a position of leadership. It's pretty impressive. You may have seen this photo before, his graduation picture. Donald John Trump, DT was his nickname. The man on the left is Peter David Tichtin. They were friends back then. He went by Doc from Mount Vernon, New York.
All right, well, that was the voice of Greg Kelly. He was interviewing our next guest, who is Peter Tichtin, who did grow up with President Trump. And yes, we're going to be talking about that. He wrote a book called What Makes Trump Tick. But there's so much that Peter is doing that I happened to meet him recently, and we were off to the races. So we're going to talk about some other things, and then we will get into how he knew President Trump. And by the way, that clip with Greg Kelly was so cool because it is down Madison Avenue and it's this beautiful, I mean, he's marching President Trump right in the middle with the other cadets behind him. It's just amazing. I think you'd enjoy it. I'm going to get this book. I can't wait actually to read it. But Peter is involved. The funny thing is, ironic thing is that his law firm helps people that no one else wants to help, cases that no one else wants to touch, meaning attorneys, you know, maybe cases that are hopeless, maybe cases that people can't pay. And so that tells you something about him, doesn't it? Well, Peter's going to be joining us in just a minute. But first, we just celebrated the 250th anniversary of this country. We're not done yet, but the actual day was July the 4th. And we talked so much about freedom and people in Washington, D.C., which is where Bruce and I had the privilege of being, were so filled with joy. There was so much discussion, so much celebration of America's freedom. That was the theme. And how could it not be? And as a matter of fact, I just saw a really unfortunate video in Great Britain where the police, which is their pattern, it's actually in their bylaws now, have to treat white men differently than different colors of people. And I saw them mistreat a white kid who just got beaten by a black kid and throw him against the wall and just berate him. And that's not freedom. Great Britain has lost its freedom, but America, thank God, still has theirs. And along with that freedom is this whole thing about the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Of course, I could do a lecture on that, but I better go back to babies. But life, the right to life. And every baby born and unborn in this country has a right to life. This is not China where they kill their children. This is not India where they drown them. This is the United States of America where we believe our children are beautiful, precious, because we believe in God. And that's what he has said to us, that those babies, those newborns are a gift from him. Children are a crown and a glory. And so every child is special, and every child born in this country has the right to life. And so with that, preborn is like jumping in to help moms who are confused about this and not only help them find a better way by showing them an ultrasound and helping change their minds about what they do with their baby and their choice, but also providing other things for them, spiritual care, the knowledge of forgiveness, the husbands and the fathers, I should say, and the moms. It's pretty amazing stuff. And so I've been talking to you about preborn for a long time, and they are our sponsor. And for that, we are very grateful. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy if you would like to help them. And I think you would. It's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, ladies and gentlemen, sit back. You're going to enjoy this. Peter Tichtin is just delightful. He has a lot of great stories about Donald Trump, but he also has his own stories about what's going on today. A lot of knowledge. And we'll talk to him on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Present to you the New York Military Academy from Cornwall on Hudson, New York. New York Military Academy stands out due to its unique connection to the president himself. President Trump is a 1964 graduate and has been enshrined as one of our alumni of distinction. This historic academy has been named the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, that's JROTC. And are marching with their cadet dress uniforms. Look at these. All modeled after post-World War I General Black Jack Pershing's gray uniform.
All right, so I thought that might bring memories back to our guest that we're going to be interviewing this morning. His name is Peter Tichton. Peter, does that bring back memories to you?
Yes, I'm picturing the our dark blue dress uniforms with all 33 buttons on the front.
Well, that was, of course, that was the cadets of the New York Military Academy, and that's, of course, where you met President Trump, and that's part of your history. But that was actually the military cadets coming in at the second inaugural, president's second inaugural, which I thought was funny. And Peter, I'll give you a proper introduction in a second. But the one thing I noticed watching the cadets come in is they did not look like what you guys looked like when you were cadets. It was a little difference. I mean, I saw some plump girls. I'm sorry. This is my commentary. My, how things have changed. Because you guys were buff and fit, and I loved looking at those old pictures. But let me just say that Peter, of course, has a larger life than that. He's the founder and senior managing partner of the Tichton Law Group. With decades of courtroom experience, he's handled cases at both federal and state levels. He's known President Donald J. Trump since they two were 16 years old, and they have remained close friends throughout their lives. He authored the book, What Makes Trump Tick, which details the truth about his long history with President Trump. And we're going to talk about a little bit of that today. But, Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
It's really a pleasure.
Well, let me just tell people that you and I met probably a couple of months ago. We had breakfast together at a conference and struck up a conversation, and I loved talking to you. And yes, it was fascinating. You told me that you were really close with President Trump. That's fascinating. But really, you know what, Peter? The thing that really drew me to conversation with you was your intercession for Tina Peters. Because nobody cares about Tina Peters. And you're sitting there telling me that you have been her attorney, you've worked with her, and just before I let you talk, I was in D.C. We just got back last night. I know you were there, too, because Tina showed me her pictures in the Oval Office with you being right there. So you have advocated for Tina Peters. She's out of prison now. And I want to start with that. What would cause a man like you, who's achieved such heights, you're a New Yorker, I think, originally, care about Tina Peters, because most of the Northeast and certainly D.C. doesn't care about her. What grabbed you about that story, made you want to help?
Well, you know, I see things much more from a national point of view than from a local one. And New York is actually a distant past, thank God, because I wouldn't want to be there these days. What makes me want to deal with the Tina Peters case and work on it? I'm involved with a number of election cases. And I'm involved with J6 cases. I'm involved with election fraud altogether. And so this fit right in with what I was doing. At the time that I was asked to represent Tina, she already had a team in place, but it was a team without leadership, and they needed a lead attorney to come in and do what I did, which was to realized that I had really great lawyers that were there to work, and basically just help them, guide them slightly, because they didn't need much, and to also join the team, you know, for writing briefs, et cetera, et cetera. So it was it was a labor of love, because we knew that by the time I came in, Tina had already been sentenced. She's already in prison for a while. And so it was a labor of love, because we needed to get this lady out.
Yes.
You know, you spent time with her. You saw her sharp acumen. You saw that she's a good person. And that's what I saw, too. And a person wrongfully imprisoned as really a political prisoner. That's exactly what she was, and that's why she needed to come out.
Well, I completely agree. My history with Tina Peters, Tina, is that I had been interviewing her and interacting with her, even as a friend on the phone, since before she went to prison, after all this broke through. And then when she got out, two days ago was the first day I actually had ever seen her in person, and yet I feel we've had a lot, we've shared a lot, and this is a case that really has gripped me. I went back and watched the sentencing of the judge. I'm sure you've seen all of that, and I don't know if I'm asking you to recall something that it's been a while since you saw it, but I've never seen, my husband's an attorney, he's a former FBI agent, he was a prosecutor in Cook County, he said he had never heard a judge talk to be so inappropriate in a sentencing trial. Do you have any comments about that?
Yeah, he's part of the problem. I'm sorry to say this, but Colorado is a captured state. You know, once the election fraud becomes so rampant that there really is no choice by the voters, it's all fixed, then what we see over and over again is how corruption comes into play. You know, corruption first to make sure they maintain their positions, and corruption second to see how they take advantage of them for their own power, for their own money, for their own prestige, or to avoid things that would give them fear. Tina Peters told me one time that these are the things that cause people to sell out. It's power, position, money, and fear.
Yes.
And those are the four things that she lists. And I learned from her, you know, because she's right, and that those are the four things. And we see this judge. God knows what he was promised, but I don't trust that judge to be honest in any way, shape, or form, because he was so off the deep end. Let me explain what I'm talking about. You know, most people think she was convicted of something to do with election fraud. But really what it was giving the false name of the person who was attending and watching the Secretary of State install what they call the trusted build. Now, a trusted build, you do them all the time on your cell phone, I'm sure, every time you update your apps. those are trusted builds. You're updating your program, but you're not deleting any data. That's the trusted part, not to delete the data. These trusted builds, that's what they called them, but that was a lie, because they wiped out all of the data, then reinstalled the program so that it, whatever election data was on those machines were gone forever. You could never get it back. You know how you can get back a file after things are wiped out, but you can't get back a file after you rewrite on it. And that's what these programs did.
Wow. Well, and so, what she did, she copied the true data before they did that switch.
Three things. Number one, she imaged the Dominion machine so that she had a copy of the true data, exactly like you said. Second, she had the person who was doing the imaging, who is a computer expert, present to watch the Secretary of State's people install the true build and wipe out all the data. And then the third thing he did was that he imaged the machine again. And the comparison between the first imaging and the second imaging showed 92,000 files were deleted. But the thing is, it was not a crime for her, for Tina, to image the machine, and they didn't charge her for a crime for imaging it. What they did was they went after her and they made the crime to fit, you know, their desires to go after her. And they went after her because, you know, other clerks also imaged the machines, but they all gave in and gave up their images when push came to shove to the Secretary of State, who's the guilty one in the first place. So it's like giving the evidence over to the burglar.
Right.
So what happened was that the Secretary of State didn't have any say in terms of this, in terms of the election. But as the person who was in charge of making the rules regarding COVID, he made a rule that for the trusted build, you can't have more than four people, and the identity has to be given of those four people. Now, when Tina found out that they were coming to basically wipe out her data, she attempted to get someone who could image the machine from the government of Colorado. But their people, they didn't have anybody that could do it. So then she had to go find somebody. And ultimately she found somebody who was, you know, the top guy for this, who was certified by the Department of Homeland Security. And the only person that needed to give her access was her, not the Secretary of State. And but there was one condition. You can have Conan Hayes, you can have this man do this job, but you cannot use his name. Why? Why couldn't she use his name? Because he had just been instrumental in wiping out a human trafficking cartel. And they were gunning for him. They literally wanted him dead. It was going to risk his life to put his name out there. Because what this man did, this guy Conan Hayes, they're talking about American heroes. I mean, how many untold numbers of children, untold numbers of women were saved from hell from this man?
Wow.
Are you saying,
Peter, that the so she could not? That was part of the evidence, the strong evidence that she had. The person that she used had these qualifications, but she couldn't use his name, which made them able to discredit the anonymous person as just some person. I mean, at least that's the impression I got. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that's exactly what happened here. And here's the worst part. That judge, and this is why I'm on this tangent, because of what you're asking me, that judge would not allow her to testify as to her reasons for giving the false name. She wasn't able to show that she didn't have a felonious intent. She wasn't able to show that what she did was appropriate. He would not allow that evidence to go in.
Well, okay, so, Peter, I know you have... I'm not a legal person, I'm an opinion person. But I would just say that the reason this may be obvious to everyone, but the reason they went after Peter with such Tina with such a vengeance was, of course, they actually want her dead. I think that's my extrapolation. I think they put her in prison. She was attacked by inmates. They accused her of attacking an inmate, which is a whole setup. They put her through hell, through absolute hell. And even now they're trying to, she feels that they're trying to put her back in prison, which would be a nightmare for her. She's 70 years old. She's been in for, what, almost 2 years? 600 days, I think. But the reason, do they still use Dominion machines? If what happened to Tina and what she did and her evidence ever really breaks through, it could expose Colorado and other states in such a way that I'm not sure they could maintain their power. Is that what they're afraid of, Peter?
You know, there's three reasons they needed to put Tina Peters in prison. It had nothing to do with guilt. And, you know, and in terms of the sentence, I think the judge saw at that time she was 69 years old. And he probably figured, okay, look at the life tables. Okay, she's going to live another 9 years. So put her in for 9 and a half. I think that that's what this judge was intending to do, is make it a life sentence. And see that she expired while she was in prison.
I don't doubt that at all. He's such a wicked... He is so wicked. I would recommend to any of you watching, and we'll talk to Tina soon, and we'll get into that, and I'll actually play some of the interaction with him. It was just horrific. But, Peter, honestly, do you know if Colorado is still using Dominion systems?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Well, all right. So that's...
Yeah, yeah. And these machines can determine the results of the election rather than the voters. Determining it. The machines can do it.
Hey, listen, I'm all in. I know I've been talking about that for several years now, and I've been one of the few. I mean, you know, even, Peter, I'm still in D.C. working with people, and you cannot, I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can. You would not believe the smart, so-called smart people and people I love and work with who would not consider that the machines were corrupting the votes. And still some of them are. Most of them don't even know about Tina now. Or she's kind of like got cooties. She worked with that Mike Lindell guy, you know? And that's what they know. So I'm trying to change that and actually have had some success. But, Peter, goodness, right. For you to take that on, took a man in your position, I just thank you for that. I really do.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, you know, once you see what's going on, it's, you know, I don't blame anybody for not understanding or believing that the voting machine is going to actually determine the results of the election. I mean, it's got to be so far-fetched to be able to make that point. The only problem is that it's true. The first machines that dictated the results of an election were in 2004. Venezuela designed the Smartmatic and the Sequoia before that. And they did programming, and then they also had some Syrian program it as well. And the first election that was actually rigged by the computers was in 2004 when Hugo Chavez, the president at the time of Venezuela, was extremely unpopular. And there was a recall election, and he was able to win it using the machines. With 58% of the vote, and then after that, a couple of years later, they were already here in the United States helping Obama in the primaries. Because you may remember that all of a sudden, this guy, he had experience as a state legislator in Illinois. He was a community organizer. He had very little history. He was in the middle of his first term in the Senate. He didn't even do a whole term. And all of a sudden, he's being considered for president of the United States. And everybody was saying, it's impossible, until he started winning the primaries. And that's when the machines were implemented for him. And it really, our history has just been extremely corrupted.
No,
invasion into our election system, and this is really China, Venezuela, and Serbia primarily that have done this. The machines are built in China. It's got Chinese parts. Some of the parts sometimes are labeled as coming from Taiwan, which does nothing other than show their intent, you know, that they knew that they were doing something wrong, but they had to mislabel where their parts were made.
I always try to explain this. It's like the COVID vaccine. It's like anyone who says that, at least said, that the COVID vaccine was not working or they didn't want to take it, it hadn't been tested. Just lay people who were concerned, and medical people were just marginalized and punished and isolated, and it was, and we're still getting past that. And it's the same way with the voting machines. I mean, I have done a lot of, we've done shows on this, Peter, and I have been following it. And, you know, I want to make a, make a point. You probably know that the, after Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, the Democrats blamed it in part on the machines, and they did a whole documentary called Kill Chain, where they explained how the machines changed the votes. It's still available, Kill Chain. And it's just amazing that we are still in denial about that, and just the Dominion grip, the lawsuits, the shutting down a dialogue about it on Fox and Newsmax and all the major networks on radio. I had a friend that was a DJ in Chicago, and he was disciplined. He couldn't say anything negative about things like that. So it's really amazing. And Didn't Tulsi Gabbard? You know, one of the first things that she said was that the machines have to be dealt with, and she laid out a report. Has anything been done about that, Peter?
Well, you know, that's the, you know, to a certain extent, that's where the SAFE Act is supposed to help. But really, it didn't really call for hand counting. And there are systems, there are the ways around this where it, the votes could still be done by a machine, but not these machines. And really, what it really calls for is more of an examination, but they won't even let anyone look at their programming. The judges repeatedly forbid anyone to look at the programming. They say it's trade secrets. And, you know, because they don't want competition to steal their programming or whatever. But, you know, the fact of the matter is you got to be able to look at it. These are our election results. And what has been looked at and seen, and Tina Peters is well aware of this because the election machines is her number one battle cry, you know, in terms of what's going on. Yeah. But Antrim County in Michigan is, you know, after the 2020 election, we got to look at those machines. And the ES&S machines actually have phone chips on the motherboard, and we also know from about the Dominion machines that they're accessible with virtual private networks (VPNs) that they're able to communicate with others.
Oh, I know. You know, the senator, I'm just blanking on his name. He's a good friend of mine. The senator work, I'm sure you've met him, who was exposed that and has written all about it. So really, there's just so much to say about it, Peter. I think that we'll leave it with that, but not the interview, but that discussion, because we'd have to go, we need to do maybe a whole show on that. I want to turn to just the fun part. The fact that you went to the New York Military Academy with Donald J. Trump, you were 16 when you met him, and I just want to ask you, do you remember where you were and what you thought when you first met him?
We were 15, and at that point he was in some of my classes. You know, we had 100 guys in our class. There were no girls in the school at that time, and. The classes, whether it was English or math or whichever kind of class it was, our largest class would be 12 students. And most of our classes had classes, and we got along, and, you know, we liked each other. But and then the next year, he was on the soccer team, and I was on the soccer team at the beginning. And so we had... we had that in common, but our really our closest really came about in our senior year when we were 17 years old together. And that's where he was my captain. He made me the platoon sergeant of his first of the first platoon. And basically, I ran the. I joke and I say I ran his first company for him, which is Company A. But I literally did. And we had a perfect year in terms of inspections, et cetera. You know, and he was one of the most amazing people, even at that age, because other captains would, you know, freak out from time to time. They'd shout at people, or they'd hit younger cadets, or some of them were brutal. Some of them would actually, well, a cadet would be standing up in formation. And the captain turns and faces the cadet, then the cadet has to automatically go to what we call forward arms, you know, bring his rifle up in front of him. And that captain could knee that cadet in a place where I can't talk about it on radio. There was a lot of brutality that occurred in that school. And Donald Trump never, ever, ever would do anything like that to anybody. He was never freaked out, never screamed at another cadet. Well, maybe he left that for me to do. But, you know, the fact is he never did. He was always there watching everybody's backs, you know, making sure everybody was, he would insert himself in other people's problems. If he saw that people had problems and nobody was taking care of them, he would insert himself. Like, there's a fellow named Theodore Pate, P-A-I-T. He died recently, but he came to my office. He wanted me to know what Donald did for him. And, you know, it just so happens he was Peruvian and a very small stature. He was too small to be in the main barracks with the high school kids, even though he was in high school, because he was getting beaten up too much. And so Donald just took it upon himself, went to the commandant, and said, this guy has to be moved down to the middle grade school barracks because he's not going to survive. And they moved him. And then this fellow came to me years later, and he said he became a doctor. He's had a very good life, a useful life, and he's helped people. But he owes all of that, he said, to that one act of kindness that Donald Trump did and getting him moved without even being asked to do so.
You know, Peter, I watched an interview you did with Greg Kelly right after you wrote your book. Again, the book is called What Makes Trump Tick, which I can't wait to read it. You were asked, what was he like? And this was your answer. This is clip three.
You know what? He was a sweetheart of a guy. He was he was the kind of leader that you would want to meet. You'd want as your leader. In fact, with Donald, he was different than most of the others because the others basically led by fear. But Donald was just such a good guy that you just didn't want to disappoint him. And that was a better driver. It causes to have success throughout the year. I mean, you know, you have to understand this is a school that you don't leave. You get 5 days of Thanksgiving, you know, 9 days of Christmas, and a week at Easter, that which is what we called it then. And you're there all the time. And I just want to correct one thing you said. This was an actual ROTC school. If Donald would have gone into the military after school, after high school, he would have gone in as a sergeant.
So, Peter, you go on in that, and you say something about that he helped you, too. Can you share that? Can you share it as a true private?
No. I can share it. It's a long story, and I'll make it as short as I can. But there was an incident that had occurred due to another cadet mishandling of a new guy. New guy is a first-year cadet. Whatever year you come into the school, whether it's in your senior year, your sophomore year, whatever year you came into the school, that you're a new guy, and you were put on new guy rules, which were, pretty severe. You know, if you're in the hallway and any other cadet that's not a new guy walks past you, you got to literally throw your body against the wall, just slam yourself against the wall and say, "Sorry to be in your way, sir." It was like hazing for a, when you join a fraternity or something, but it was, it went on for months. And, but anyway, there was a new guy there, and he was being asked, how could you, by this other cadet, how could you do what you did? What kind of father do you have? And then the kid started crying and saying that his father died last summer, which is what happened. And so, you know, then we, you know, then I got involved because I had, I was there. But anyway, and then I took over and I told the guy to get a hold of himself because he was crying. He got a hold of himself. And then I released him. He went running over to the commandant's office to complain about the other guy. But then they brought the other guy over and then somehow it all turned into my fault. And the word got out, a false word, that I was had made fun of this cadet's deceased father, which is something that nobody did, and certainly I wouldn't do. I mean, it was just such an ugly thing to be said about someone that I was actually shunned by the cadets. It wasn't an organized shun. You know, nobody gets allowed to talk to Peter Dickton, but it was, you know, people thought I was guilty of this. And it's a very small community of about 365 cadets all together. And, you know, and everybody thought I was, had done something really unseemly. So, but then there was a bus trip and the soccer team. And this was in my second year, and that's where Donald Trump was on the bus with me. And he just wouldn't have any part of it. You know, he just started talking to me. And that ended it as far as the whole term, team was concerned. You know, and so I kind of got restored back to normalcy to some extent. I was also put on new guy rules, even though I was in my second year, which apparently never happened to anybody else in the history of the school. But and so I just was the best new guy anybody could ever be, and I was removed for that after 3 weeks. But that's just what you would expect from Donald Trump at that time.
He was just, but you know, I hear a lot of times, I know we can't do an exhaustive discussion about this, Peter, but we do hear, those of us that have ears to hear, the way he's helped other people through the years, giving the generosity and all of that. And he said himself he doesn't like to talk about that when he's always... That's the irony, Peter. He does boast, you know that, and yet he doesn't want any credit for the way he helps people. Sometimes we have trouble understanding that, but I love that about him.
I don't think it's that he doesn't want any credit. I think it's that he doesn't want to capitalize on somebody else's difficulties.
Okay.
I think it's as deep as that.
Yeah.
Knowing him.
Yeah,
that's right, the way I do. He doesn't want to be a hero because somebody else needed help.
Yes, I hear you. All right, so needless to say, one of the things that's said about President Trump is that, you know, his record with women, and that's been, it's amazing to me how the left use that when they have no morals at all. So you were asked in this interview if he was a ladies' man, and you said absolutely not. Can you address that? At least in the academy.
Yes. Okay. So I was on the yearbook committee. You know that you know the people put out the yearbook, and we were the ones that decided who's everybody's pal, who's most likely to succeed, and so on. And Donald Trump I don't know how many of us were voting. I think like 9 of us or maybe 7 of us. But whatever it was, he lost by 1 on everybody's tally. It was between him and Acilio Arriaga, a friend of ours. We called him Chico. And Chico won everybody's tally. But we needed to give something to Donald, okay? We just couldn't just leave it at that. So we invented a category called ladies' man. but which is kind of a joke because there were no girls in our school. I mean, the only way we could get a picture of him with a girl was we found this one girl that worked in the administration part of the school, and so she posed in a picture with him.
The picture in the yearbook said "Ladies' Man." That was the title of that picture. But it was she was just a girl who worked in the office, and you brought her out to stand next to him. That's kind of funny. So I would be interested to know if you can say what kind of relationship he had with his mother. He speaks of her so with such respect. Of course, you weren't around his parents, I guess, much. But what do you think about his relationship with his mother?
A couple of times, or maybe more. But you know, of course, it wasn't like I was nobody to speak to. I was just another cadet. I was the platoon sergeant at that time. But I just, you know, they were there to get Donald and to take him out to lunch. They were allowed to come up on Sundays, and you could go off campus with your parents for lunch on Sundays. That was the one exception to you could never leave the school. And but his parents were like normal parents. I mean, normal for our time. You know, we were in a different age. You know, when we were young children, they used to literally say, "To spare the rod is to spoil the child." And there were kids that would come into school that would be black and blue from beatings from their parents. And nobody would ever think twice about it. It was the way things were. And so, yes, he had the same kind of love and respect for his parents that the other cadets had for theirs, except, you know, he was lucky he had parents came to visit him. There were a lot of students that didn't have that. And as the captain of A Company, I can tell you, at mail call, because we had mail call every day but Sunday, and the cadets would all line up, you know, they'd come in from, you know, we were two sections of the barracks. They'd all come into one section, and they're down the hallway and up the stairs. You know, we'd all line up and be there, and then Donald would be in the front, and he'd be reading out, you know, the letter for Peter Dickon, you know, so, you know, oh, great, thank you. And in those days, you know, your parents actually hand-wrote letters to you, and you hand-wrote letters back. And some kids were lucky. They had the kinds of parents that would send up cookies and different things to eat or whatever. And, of course, you know, we cadets tended to share those things. Most cadets at least got letters, but there were some cadets that didn't even get letters from home. And one thing I can tell you about Donald Trump is that he always knew who was who. He knew who did not have anything coming from any parents. And he always had the right thing to say. He always, you know, he just was able to ease the situation and make that person feel that, well, maybe you're not loved there, but you're loved here.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's Donald Trump.
Yeah. I believe you. I see that in him, not that intimately, but I see that character in him. I do. It's an enigma. But Peter, I alluded to this, but I want to know what you would say. What did he boast a lot at the academy? Did that come later, or was he just a boastful kid even early?
Well, I don't know. I tell people he got half a sense of humor from me, and I know that's an exaggeration, but I'm telling you, he got a little bit of it from me.
He's hilarious.
You learn from each other when you're 17 years old and you live together.
He is hilarious.
So, yeah,
I hope you kept some for yourself.
You know, we all learn from each other. But he, all I can tell you is that as far as being a good guy, somebody that had your back, he was. That was him. That was Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And to this day, you know, I still see him as that character. You know, yes, he's older now. I'm older now. But it's funny how, I mean, if you ran into somebody that you were best friends with in high school and you saw them many years later, you might not even have anything in common, you know, where you're going to tell them about the buildings you're building or whatever, because it's not really something you have in common, but there's a love.
Oh, I understand that. Most of us understand that, Peter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm older too, and when I see, there's just something that you share that nobody else does. And even if you don't verbalize it, it's a moment in time. It's a relationship. It's a look, you know. No, I think it's I think it's wonderful. But before we go, though, because I didn't give you a chance to say this, what was his leadership role? Because we kind of haven't talked about that. My impression is that he was like a leader everywhere. Is that right?
He was the captain of A Company, and then he went on to the Color Guard, you know, to be in charge of that. But for most of the year, he was the captain of A Company, and that was the extent of his leadership there. Except he was well respected and well liked by all of us.
I mean, and
you know, more than most. I mean, more than almost anyone.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. How much he was appreciated.
Oh, I believe you. And his athleticism, how would you describe it?
Really, you know, I wish that I had been as athletic. I mean, when I played soccer, I was the worst guy on the team, so I turned into the manager. He played, you know, forward. He was one of the guys that would sink the goals. You know, he was the only team I played with him, you know, because I didn't really play soccer, but, you know, I was part of it. But intramural football, we played together. A good, strong, athletic kid, you know. Yeah.
Do you remember that time? I'm trying to.
Baseball team as well.
That makes me think of, you know, he's at an NFL game. This is before he's president. I'm sure. Sorry, I was looking quickly and didn't find it. But the crowd is there, and they invite him. Who wants to make a basket, or you want to try, Mr. President? I can't recall if he's president or not, so I can't say this accurately. But, Mr. Trump, do you want to try? Sure, I'll do it. And he goes over and just perfectly puts that basketball in the hoop. And do you remember that?
I don't, but I can picture it.
Yeah, it was great.
Know, certainly consistent with his ability.
It was great because I think, you know, most presidents are not that athletic. I think George W. Bush is pretty good about throwing a baseball, but he nailed it. And it was just a fun moment. So at this point in your lives, yeah. Peter, do you guys, there's a real peace and joy about having a friend like that. I want to say that I alluded to this, but it really takes character in a man like you who is so accomplished yourself. You are. You've done incredible things, built your own law firm. And by the way, I want to say the website for his law firm is legalbrains.com. Legalbrains.com. And they take on really hard cases that nobody else wants, which I think is remarkable. But for you to have the character to sort of elevate your friend who has just gone to such great heights, you know, that you don't seem to have any kind of competition or envy. It's obvious you just admire him and you're his faithful friend. And I think that says a lot about you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm one of these people that can kind of see what's really going on. And if you think about it, you know, we started off this conversation, we were talking about the machines.
Right.
And Tina Peters. And, you know, we went to visit Donald recently as well. And I mean, the president recently. And you know, I was at the tag along for Tina Peters. She was the one that was really invited, and I was invited to join her. But it was really her show. And that was just something really that was very special. And funny, at the beginning when we started talking, you know, he said, "And Peter, oh God, I've known Peter for so long." And he started thinking, he said, "I think I've known Peter longer than anybody." So, at least anybody in the White House, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So that was a wonderful time. But when you think about what Tina Peters is about, and it's about the machines, and if you think about the fact that this is real, that these machines actually are determining the outcome of our elections. I mean, how could that be? How could that even happen? And then you realize if that is the case, well, we know that Joe Biden didn't fix the election of 2020. That man couldn't fix a flat tire.
No.
So, you know, he couldn't. He's incapable. So who was it? And when you really get down to it, it's China. It's China. It was Venezuela. It was Serbia. And so when you look at what this is really as serious as it gets. I mean, if China came in here with bullets and guns, we'd know exactly how to deal with them. But when they surreptitiously come in and sneak into our election system, that's a whole other different situation.
And much more dangerous.
So, you know, much more dangerous. Our country is at great risk.
Yeah.
Things are going on that you know, if people could only see it and understand it better, there would be such an outcry that it might push us into a war that we don't want, considering that they're armed and dangerous. But you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, Donald Trump knows exactly what's going on. He knows this. He knows that the virus was a biological weapon that was launched upon us. I mean, even if we don't have the proof that it was intentionally released from the lab, we know that once it spread through Wuhan, that all air traffic to all other Chinese cities was canceled. You couldn't fly from Wuhan to Beijing, but you could easily fly from Wuhan to any city in the United States and in Western Europe. So there's no question that they basically intentionally infected us with the COVID virus.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you, Peter. Gordon Chang is a good friend, and we often talk, at least on the air. And you know, so he's talked to me about how China doesn't want to destroy us through war. They want to take our land and take everything that we have and just replace our people. And so I'm convinced. I'm there. I guess I would settle right now, short of a war with China. I would settle with, get those machines out of our country. Get them out. I mean, I can't believe people are so stubborn and stupid about that, because there's plenty of evidence, if only, you know, we could get someone to listen. So I'm glad that you're there.
Thank you. We've been incredibly infiltrated. You know, these people are not our friends, and they're all over the place.
Yep. Okay. I know, yeah. Peter. Well, that's why, you know, that's why I believe in God. Otherwise, I'd be crazy. But I do trust him. And, it doesn't mean we're going to have a happy outcome. I don't have that kind of faith. But I know he could do that if he wants to do it. But there's a larger things at stake. And so we just have to sometimes put our lives in his hands. But President Trump has really tackled so much of this, and so has his cabinet. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing to see. And I think this is a moment of time for which I'm personally very grateful. But, Peter, it's been such a pleasure. And I want to mention again that your book is called What Makes Trump Tick. I think people are going to want to read that. What Makes Trump Tick? And also his law firm. You're down in Florida now, right?
Yes, in Deerfield Beach.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so it's legalbrains.com. If you got a complex problem, go to legalbrains.com, and Peter and his team can help you. So, Peter Tickton, thank you. God bless you. And, just God bless you. By the way, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously, and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Well, Peter, we didn't get to talk about everything and I wanted to. But he was asked by me, but also by Greg Kelly, if President Trump was a ladies' man. I want you to hear his response again. Clip four.
It's all a myth. We didn't have any girls in our school. We were all boys, and we were there, as I was saying, all the time. It was a military academy, and so we, you know, really, there was no dating. You couldn't go to town to have dinner. That would be AWOL. You'd get kicked out. You know, you have to be there all the time. So we would march into the mess hall three times a day. There's no dating. In fact, we had to find a girl who, we got a girl from the administration building who was one of the secretaries there. That's the girl that's in the picture.
So they said that it was labeled in their yearbook that he was a ladies' man because they pulled this girl out of the office to take a picture with him. But of course, they were just standing next to each other. It's very innocuous. But I thought that was kind of fun because he did go on to be a ladies' man. Of course he did. But this is at 17. He's still not, which I think is pretty amazing. And that's probably why his parents sent him to this school, to just have him focus on his work and become the man that he did become. And so then Peter was asked about what his leadership was like. And I think that he did allude to this in our conversation, but I want you to hear what Peter Ticton had to say about his best friend, Donald Trump. This is clip five.
You know, even then, he showed the leadership ability that he has now. He was an incredible human being at that point in time, and somebody that he would do things for people, help people, jump into place, where he didn't necessarily even belong, just to be able to protect somebody that needed protection or whatever. He's a guy that a lot of people are very grateful to for those little things that he did that changed our lives.
Could somebody tell me how we got from this perception of Trump that we have now, from this perception that Peter Ticton and the other cadets with him had a President Trump at that time, what kind of a kid he was? Do you think that what kind of a kid you were at 17 had an impact on what kind of an adult you are now? I think it certainly, for me, it did. I wasn't fully formed, but I had my values were pretty formed at that time, even if I wasn't able to live up to them. So I think this is really interesting stuff, don't you? And the fact that he cared so much about people, was so faithful and true to his friends, I just think that's amazing. Now, look, that doesn't wipe out all the things he's done, no. But it's something to think about when you are taking the measure of the man, and that's what we've just done. Well, Peter Ticton's quite a man himself, too. I wish you could see the picture of the two of them together in their uniforms. I guess if you buy the book, you can. What Makes Trump Tick is the name of the book, and I'm going to order it right now myself. Listen, I appreciate you listening today. I hope you've enjoyed it, this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. Oh, and by the way, don't forget Preborn, our sponsor. If you enjoyed this show, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, bye again, and thank you for listening.